So what are you going to do about it, Doug? He spread his hands in a gesture of uncertainty. That's just it, Pancho. I don't know what I can do. Humphreys isn't trying to take political control of Cellini. He's after economic power. He knows that if he controls the resources of the Belt, he'll have Cellini and everyone else under his thumb. He can let us continue to govern ourselves, but we'll have to buy our water and most of our other raw materials from him. Pancho shook her head. Once Cellini had been virtually self-sufficient, mining water from the deposits of ice at the lunar poles and using the raw materials scraped from the moon's surface layers of regolith. Cellini even exported fusion fuels to Earth and supplied the aluminum and silicon for building solar power satellites in Earth orbit. But once Cellini's government decided to allow limited immigration from the devastated Earth, the lunar nation's self-sufficiency ended. Cellini became dependent on the metals and minerals, even the water, imported from the asteroids. And the trickle of immigration from Earth had become an ever-increasing stream, Pancho knew. What are you going to do? Pancho repeated. Looking decidedly unhappy, Stavanger said, I'll have a talk with Humphreys. Not that it will do much good, I expect. Pancho heard his unspoken words. It's up to me to stop Humphreys, she realized. I've got to fight him. Nobody else can. Okay, she said to Stavanger. You talk. I'll act. No fighting here, Stavanger snapped. Not here. Not here, Doug, Pancho promised. Already in her head, she was starting to figure out how much it would cost to go to war against Humphrey's space systems out in the asteroid belt.
Flying in the rattling, roaring helicopter from SeaTac Aerospaceport, the Asian-American who had been assigned to make certain that Pancho Lane survived the sabotage of the cable car looked forward to returning to his home in the mountains of Washington State's Olympic Peninsula. His family would be waiting for him, he knew. So would the fat stipend from Yamagata Corporation. The helicopter touched down on the cleared gravel area at the foot of the path that led up to his cabin. Strangely, no one was there to greet him. Surely his wife and children heard the copter's throbbing engines. He walked to the edge of the helipad, clutching his travel bag in one hand, squinting at the miniature sandstorm of gravel and grit from the helicopter's swirling rotors. From the gravel pad he could see downslope to the drowned city of Port Townsend and the cluster of scuba diving camps huddled around it. On a clear day, he could gaze through binoculars at the shattered remains of Seattle's high-rise towers poking up above the waters of Puget Sound. It had been a curious assignment, he thought. Fly to the moon as a tourist, at a cost that would have emptied his life savings, and ride in a certain cable car at a certain time, carrying emergency survival equipment to make certain that Ms. Lane would not be killed by the accident. He shrugged his heavy shoulders as he watched the helicopter dwindle into the cloudy sky, then turned and headed up the winding path toward his home. He never saw his wife and children, who lay in their bloody beds, each of them shot through the head. Two men grabbed him as he stepped through the front door of his cabin and put a gun to his temple. By the time the local police arrived on the scene several days later, it seemed obvious to them that the man had slaughtered his family and then committed suicide. He must have gone nuts, said the police chief. It happens. A guy just snaps for no apparent reason. Case closed. At Cellini, the maintenance technician who had planted the tiny explosive device that knocked the car off its cable was also found dead. Of an overdose of narcotics. His papers showed that although he was an employee of Cellini's maintenance department, he had recently received a sizable amount of money from some unknown benefactor. The money was untraceable. Apparently, he had used it to buy the drugs that killed him. Rumors quickly bruited through Cellini that the money had come from Humphrey's space systems. There was no hint that it had actually been provided by Yamagata Corporation.
Humphrey's Mansion. Somebody tried to kill Pancho? Martin Humphreys could barely hide his elation. You mean there's somebody else who wants that gutter snipe offed? Grigor Milenkovich was not smiling. Humphreys sometimes wondered if the man knew how to smile. The chief of HSS's security department, Grigor, was a lean, silent man with thinning dark hair combed straight back from his forehead and dark, probing eyes. He said little and moved like a furtive shadow. He habitually wore suits of slate gray. He could fade into a crowd and remain unnoticed by all except the most discerning eye. Humphreys thought of him as the ultimate bureaucrat, functioning quietly, obeying any order without question, as inconspicuous as a mouse, as dangerous as a plague bacillus. He stood before Humphreys' desk, sallow-faced, humorless. "You are being blamed for the attempt on her life," he said, his voice low and soft as a lullaby. "Me?" Grigor nodded wordlessly. "I didn't order her killed," Humphreys snapped. "If you freelanced this..." "Not me," said Grigor, "nor anyone in my department." "Then who?" Grigor shrugged. "Find out," Humphreys commanded. "I want to know who tried to kill Pancho. Maybe I'll give him a reward." "This is not funny, sir," Grigor replied. "An order has gone out from Astro Corporation headquarters to arm Astro's vessels in the belt." Humphreys could feel his cheeks flush with anger. "That damned grease monkey. She wants a war, does she? Apparently she believes that you want one." Humphreys drummed his fingers on his desktop. "I don't," he said at last. "But if she wants to fight, by God, I'll flatten her, no matter what it costs." Long after Grigor had left his office, Humphrey's phone said in its synthesized voice, "Incoming call from Douglas Stavanger." Humphreys glared at the phone's blinking amber light. "Tell him I'm not available at present. Take his message." Humphreys knew what Stavanger's message would be. He wants to be the peacemaker again, just as he was 8 years ago. But not this time, Humphreys decided. Pancho wants to go to war, and I'm going to accommodate her. I'll get rid of her and take control of Astro in one swoop. What was it that German said, he wondered silently? The guy who wrote about war? Then he remembered. War is a continuation of politics by other means. Other means. Humphreys smiled, alone in his office, and told his phone to instruct Grigor to contact that mercenary, Doric Harbin. "He's a one-man Mongol horde," Humphreys remembered. "A madman when he's high on drugs. Time to get him onto Pancho's trail."
Amanda kept her eyes closed and her breathing deep and regular. Humphreys lay beside her in their sumptuous bedroom, twitching slightly in his sleep. Nightmares again, she thought. He's such a powerful and commanding person all day long, demanding and imperious. But when he sleeps, he whimpers like a whipped little boy. She couldn't hate Martin Humphreys. The man was driven by inner demons that he allowed no one to see, not even his wife. He was alone in his torments, and he kept a high wall of separation around the deep-set fears that haunted his dreams. Even his sexual excesses were driven by a desperate need to prove himself master of his world. "He says he does it to excite me," Amanda told herself. "But we both know it's really to control me, to make me obey him, to prove that he's my master." At least that's ended, she thought, for the time being. He won't do anything that might harm my baby. If he knew it wasn't his, if he knew this life growing inside me is Lars's son, Martin would kill me and the child both. He mustn't know. He mustn't find out. It had been simple enough to hack into Humphrey's medical records and replace his genetic profile with Lars's. Amanda had done that herself. No accomplices, no chance of anyone revealing to her husband what she had done. To the doctors and medical technicians in Humphrey's employ, the baby's genetic profile seemed consistent with those of its parents. And it was. Yet she knew it would be bad enough once the baby was born.